Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
WNYC's Bob Henley to explain the New York City Council's new slush fund scandal, including, is Christine Quinn the perpetrator, the whistleblower, or something in between? Hi, Bob.
I pick something in between.
Well, we'll get to that. I think this is one where the listeners are getting the whiff of something that stinks but aren't quite sure what it is, because it's really inside baseball, or who's causing the stench. So let's do the slush fund scandal 101, okay?
Sure.
What money was found to be hidden where?
Well, I guess in the last cycle, they found some $4 million in change, loose change, if you will, that was being attributed to organizations, something like, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, Americans for Veterans, you know, Citizens for Special Needs Children, that kind of thing. And that evidently, I mean, it all goes, I guess we saw this New York Post story, and I think to a large degree how this story came out is part of what is the Speaker's problem now. Last week in quite a blockbuster article, the Post broke a story that there was an ongoing federal and DOI investigation of city council finances, at which point Christine Quinn that same day appeared to be playing catch-up and disclosed on the record what she knew about it and when she knew it.
And Christine Quinn, we should mention, is the Speaker of the City Council and is hoping to be mayor after the election next year.
Exactly right. And also someone who rode into town with the expectation of being a reformer. Much of her early part of her tenure was about having a budget process that was quote-unquote transparent, where members' names and the items that they would be getting would be clearly defined and in public view. One of the things people need to understand is out of the $60 billion budget, the council has purview over something called Schedule C, which is roughly $200 million that the council has discretion over. Now, most often this money goes, for instance, the city has been starving prosecutors for a while. That may seem antithetical to what you believe about the Bloomberg administration, but for whatever reason, they've been cutting prosecutors or the CCRB, so the Complaint Review Board. The council can then add some money in and then work it out with the Bloomberg administration and resolve it. There were also nonprofits, some 2,500 nonprofits, many of them names that are household names, 92nd Street Y, all kinds of worthwhile, well-established groups that also get money. The circumstance here was that they would use these nonprofit groups that didn't exist as a way of holding on to money that could then be used at the leadership's discretion for certain nonprofits. So the hypothetical would be you're a councilman or councilwoman from a district where there is a nonprofit, well-respected, all of a sudden develops a leak in the roof or some other issue that needs to be quickly resolved. The speaker needs your vote on something. You go to the speaker and say, listen, I don't feel so, this is hypothetical, I don't feel so great about congestion pricing. What can you do for me? And then the speaker says, oh, well, look it, right here. We happen to have some money to direct towards this valuable nonprofit. Now, it's not a slush fund in the sense that Speaker Quinn wasn't getting her hair done with the money, but she theoretically could then award that money to that loyal council person who then looks great locally. That's what we're talking about here.
So nobody is accused of lining their own pockets with this money. But I read one stat today, and I wonder if you can confirm this, that about a quarter of the money spent from this fund went to organizations in Speaker Quinn's district. Do you know that to be true?
I don't know that to be true, but what is interesting is the whole process of courting the nonprofit realm. And I mean, of course, you know, it's an interesting, we have like a tale of two universes here, because of course we have the philanthropist billionaire mayor who quite generously, historically, long before he got politically involved, endowed nonprofits and major institutions that exist to some degree because of the mayor's largesse as a private citizen. That has continued while he was mayor. So this is small potatoes, but when you compare it, but it really is about ward healing, the old-fashioned thing of providing money to nonprofits that do important work and then having a photo op, even a dinner where someone is fed it. And that's how you develop the kind of credibility and a track record because of these press opportunities. So that's kind of how it works. The other thing is, we might add, there is a criminal investigation. Councilman Kendall Stewart told the papers early this year that he had received a subpoena. The printed reports indicate that someone in his office was involved with creating nonprofits. So we don't entirely know whether or not, unbeknownst to the council leadership, someone may have like used a nonprofit. Now, I'm from New Jersey, and the way this is done, if you really want to rip it off, is you have your estranged wife and you're in some kind of tough court settlement. She's in a nonprofit and you work in the assembly. So you settle your score with her by magically having money go to her nonprofit where she's a CEO. That's the kind of thing. We still don't know if it happened again.
How much money is involved and over what period of time? Do we know that?
I think that in the 2001, 2006, 2007 were like, you know, $12 million. But Speaker Quinn's narrative here is the thing we have to focus on. She says that, of course, after the Post broke the story, that this all came to her attention last spring. That would be 2007, that last spring. That's when she first learned about the use of what's called holding codes. Now, that's not as egregious. That's the idea of having an assigned number that doesn't have the name of an organization, but is a place to park money. She then says that she instructed staffers to end the practice, and that then she found out this fall, just a few months after her first admonition, that indeed they had not followed her requests, and that she then found that there were these organizations that were used that were phony names. And then she says she turned that information over to the U.S. Attorney and Department of Investigation. Now, the people like Dick Daty from Citizens Union, who have been strong supporters of Quinn because of her reformer persona.
That's the Citizens Union, a good government watchdog group.
He said, why didn't she come forward in the spring and say this is what she had discovered in the spirit of transparency? And moreover, a print reporter asked, well, did you write a memo to the file saying that you had found this, it was contemporaneous? And of course, her staff said that didn't happen. So she has that problem in terms of credibility, is that she didn't write a letter to the file, if you will. And this is what you do in good corporate governance of any institution, nonprofit. You find something that's difficult and you want to make sure it's changed. You write a file, a letter to the file, and this way it preserves the historical record and also puts your subordinates on notice that this has to change. She didn't do that.
We can take a few questions for Bob Henley, who is helping us understand the City Council slush fund scandal. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call us up or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. I see one comment up there already, a few, but one of them that says that first I cringed when I heard this story, suspecting the media would give it a pass. So blatant that it actually sounds like some sort of weird normal operating procedure in politics. Talk about corruption. So I appreciate Bob's uncynical, ever earnest nature for taking this one on. There you go. A shout out from a listener. And you know, in a way, this listener nails part of what is so troubling about this whole thing. It is so close to business as usual that you can almost shrug at it and say, well, that's what they do, right? They hold back some money that can be used as member items or pork or earmarks or call it whatever you will, discretionary funding. So what's so bad about that, one might ask?
Well, I think the thing is using the anonymous groups that don't exist really creates a problem, because it's impossible to track whether or not the money gets to where it needs to get to. And that's the problem. You just can't have a budget that has a public document, any document that is about people's money, that has false names in it. Just period, end of story.
It's a transparent, and even if they didn't do it with the fake names, and I love one of these names, I think it was the Committee for Informed Citizens.
Yeah, I feel really bad that I may have read that and not acted on it. So I think the Fourth Estate, we all have to take some public lashings. I mean, what were we thinking? I mean, when we saw that, we should have, you know, the spirit of Ed Bradley should have been upon us, and we should have said, what is that?
Yes, the Committee for Informed Citizens, created specifically to keep citizens uninformed
exactly.
About how the money was being spent that we pay in our tax dollars. So let me ask you a political question here.
Sure.
We don't know who leaked word of this to the New York Post. There was this investigation taking place, and it was all kind of, you know, going on quietly at the U.S. Attorney's Office and wherever. Now, all of a sudden, it's a big public thing in the press. This happened to come 2 days, 3 days after Christine Quinn pushed congestion pricing through the council, leaving a lot of members who might have preferred to vote no politically exposed. Am I reaching to even ask the question if there's a relationship?
Well, in tip of my hat to the Post, you have to look at the fact that the sources there are council aides. That's who actually provided the story in chapter and verse. And I have, I think, assurances from Quinn's press operation that there wasn't some ham-handed attempt to get in front of the story. So I do think that it appears that the speaker took this body of some 50-odd individuals for a spin and put it through a trauma where it was closely divided, especially for a home rule message. I mean, that's what we have to understand. This was usually you have a kind of consensus that's reached with a home rule message. That is, of course, the tradition and the requirement that the city council ask for the assembly to act on something. And as Councilman Liu pointed out, generally a home rule message coming from the city council is a message that's received immediately in Albany and gets action usually that same day. When this thing dragged on, it raised questions. And is it possible that someone was aggravated or angered at the speaker and so threw up the whole Scrabble board? Perhaps. I think also this isn't just an isolated circumstance. The underlying tension is, what I'm hearing from members on the record and off the record, is they feel that her attempt, widely reported attempt to run for mayor while being speaker, is an inherent conflict, and that she's often more concerned about her political future than the council and the city's present. Now, that's probably harsh, but that's something that is being said now. So, you know, when you think of the great speakers of legislative bodies, we think of Tip O'Neill. Tip O'Neill didn't want to run for president that I know of. He had reconciled himself that his place in history was as a speaker, and that's a special, if you will, pastoral obligation. And unfortunately, with term limits, we've seen both with Gifford Miller and now with Speaker Quinn, the problem that because they can't hang around and develop that kind of that career and insight, they are always looking for higher office.
Which in all three of the speaker's cases under the current law, which began in 1989, is, you know, all three of them, yes, Gifford Miller, Christine Quinn, and originally Peter Vallone, they were all running for mayor as they got term limited out of city council. Now, what I understand is that this slush fund originated during the time that Peter Vallone was speaker.
Well, so, that's where it gets. That's why it's really important, quite frankly, to have a thorough examination. Councilman Avella, who's also running for mayor, has asked and written Attorney General Cuomo to get to the bottom of it, because the Speaker's office is saying that this business of holding codes, now that's the less egregious thing of just an anonymous sounding serial number, like the, I guess it came in bank accounts, that the money's parked at. They track that going back to the 1980s. Quite frankly, with a time of scarcity, and that's the other thing we have to look at here, is the fact that this comes at a very tough budget time, perhaps the toughest in a generation. So here we have the police doing without, the prosecutors doing without, you know, education doing without, and then we find out about this double bookkeeping, and that's the political problem.
So we don't know where it originated or who originated it in presumably 1998, 99, right?
Right. What we do actually, they go back to 88 was for their public statement in the transcript I have of Speaker Quinn's press avail.
88.
Yeah, they put it back to 88. Now, where we do have an extant public record of these names, the phony names, goes back to like 2002, 2001, which is technically the three that you mentioned. The other question is that the speaker has mentioned that there were two individuals who left as a result of this, and those are staffers. I think it's the finance, Michael Keough and Stacey Emanuel, and they haven't commented to the press, but council people and other people knowledgeable in this are speaking up for them and saying, you know, listen, these are not the kind of people that would run a rogue operation. And that's the critical part of this. Under the narrative the speaker has laid out for us, basically, it's like, as pointed out by Mark Green, it's really a double. It really hurts her in a number of ways. Either she was an incompetent manager or she's being dishonest.
John,
and that's really the problem.
John, in Hell's Kitchen, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. I'm a former executive of a nonprofit organization. And it's an awful practice for nonprofits because it makes the process secretive. People should participate. There should be oversight. What makes Agency X's roof more important than Agency's Y in the Bronx or Manhattan? I mean, it's an awful practice. You know, if they need an emergency funds, there should be a set aside for each council district that people would make public that I gave Agency X $100,000 to fix their roof. It really cheapens, in my opinion, the nonprofits in terms of what they're doing, because it's like undercover money.
John, thank you very much. Russell in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Russell.
Hi, how are you? Hi. I'd just like to know what is the definition of influence peddling? If this doesn't define influence peddling, I've heard of laundering of funds, parking money. It sounds like RICO conspiracy. I'd like to know when are they going to filing false documents. Isn't that a crime for most citizens to do?
Well, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, he's spot on. The caller's spot on. I mean, right. That's what they have to deal with.
One more. Is Bloomberg, our CEO, Mayor, using due diligence when he says, if I knew? He was transparently lying. He said, if I knew, would you think I'd sign it? See, he was lying there. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Well, do you think that he was lying or could have been? Or would his people have had any way to know about this?
What there was a cross-pollination of executives who had been at the city council at the highest levels of their finance operation that have morphed and work at the Bloomberg administration. So, and that's really, quite frankly, why there needs to be some oversight. And also, missing in action at this point is Controller Thompson.
I was just going to ask. That's whose job it really is to audit things like this. And isn't he also hoping to be the next mayor?
He is saying basically the statement he put out was that, of course, it's totally wrong to use false names to cover a budget, but there's kind of, we'll wait for the criminal prosecutors to do their work. That's kind of, I think, a cop-out procedurally, because the bottom line is people have to have the full faith and credit in their city budgeting, especially at a time of scarcity where you're asking the schools to do without. You really can't have a situation where there's two sets of rules, and I think all this, the calls have gotten to that point.
Here's a post from the comments page that says the NYPD also has a slush fund. The nonprofit Police Foundation operates in that capacity for Ray Kelly by providing cash for things that are not funded by the NYPD's official budget. For example, the 10 cops stationed abroad have their expenses, $50,000 a year, paid by the Police Foundation, and it goes on from there. Are you familiar with that organization?
Well, first of all,
is that a fair characterization by this listener?
If the individual has the name of the organization, it's not a slush fund. And if it really does exist, it's not a slush fund. We can get into a larger question about the oversight of the expenditure of police intelligence funds, the some $200 million that's involved, and that would be a worthwhile discussion about oversight. But the fact that the caller has such detail about it shows that it's a world different, quite frankly, from these phony organizations that never existed except in the mind of the person who created them.
You know, Bob, when this year began in New York State, I thought we would be talking about things like, yes, congestion pricing, universal health care for all New York City's children, reforming transparency in Albany. Instead, we've been talking about prostitutes.
You're an optimist. That's why I love you, right?
And slush funds. So tomorrow's another day. WNYC's Bob Headley. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. When we continue in a minute, New York essayist Sloane Crosley. Her latest collection of essays is called I Was Told There'd Be Cake. Stay with us.